It's a sweltering evening in Sao Paulo, but the temperature seems to do nothing to reduce the dazzling level of activity here in a neighbourhood dance studio. Despite the violence, the poverty and the corruption that still scar Brazil, there seems to be a new hope and energy among its people. Thoughtful new generation Brazilians such as Guga Strota feel they're just beginning to change the world.
With some recent recuperation of Brazilian economy, the Brazilian young people are feeling maybe angry about the American influence.
Time for America to move over. Time for Brazil to take its place on the world stage properly. It's going to be a confusing future, isn't it?
What I feel is that the leadership of many places are really stupid. What Blair does with Bush is ridiculous. What Bush does is ridiculous. And Berlusconi is ridiculous. So I don't feel so much inferior like I used to feel.
That's Guga Strota, musician and music producer, in his wife's dance studio. He expresses what many of his fellow Brazilians are saying. The trouble is, people have been predicting that Brazil is the country of the future for the past 100 years, and it hasn't happened. What's clear is that a huge upheaval is taking place elsewhere in the global economic landscape. Some of the brightest minds in the normally dismal science of economics agree that big change is on the way.
We're already seeing the dispersal of economic power and influence, I think, in the world in the early stages.
Michael Spence is a Nobel Prize-winning economist from Stanford University in California.
Let's take the status quo. We have 2.5 large economies that also happen to be advanced. The 2.5 are the United States, Europe, and then you have Japan. So that's part of the current landscape. And then you have China growing like a weed, but still at a tenth the size of the United States economy. In India, at half that size again, with a similar population. But what you're seeing, because of the growth of those economies, you can see them acting in the WTO and in other places in a way that's much more influential than they used to be, say, 25 or 30 years ago.
Now to a London-based economist who's been creating an international stir with his no-holds-barred predictions about something he calls BRICS, the rise of Brazil, Russia, India and China to the top of the tree in the world economy over the next 30 years or so. Jim O'Neill is global economist of the investment bank Goldman Sachs. There's little arguing now with his predictions of mighty prospects for India and China. But can he really mean to include Brazil in his prognosis? In the 21st century, Jim O'Neill, will the future really arrive in the country that sidestepped it for so long?
Brazil could have reached its potential in the past 50 years. The reason why it probably didn't was because of simple things like very bad macroeconomic policy and hyperinflation. If they stay down that path, it's a lot easier for Brazil to get where it should have been.
Ah, but look at Brazil. They're fading again. Here we are, front page of the Wall Street Journal yesterday. Development economists are puzzled by the way Brazil has faded yet again.
I don't share that scepticism. And in fact, even in Brazil, people jokingly say, well, why is the B? You only put the B in there because it makes the word sound good. I think the doubting Thomases about Brazil may be in for a pleasant surprise.
The first stop for any doubter in Brazil is the business capital, Sao Paulo. I'm in Dazlu. It's one of the most extravagant department stores I've ever seen anywhere, with slender personal shopping assistants standing by to escort high-spending clients into a discreet world of luxury. China's hunger for raw materials has injected a lot of money into Brazil in recent years, and some of it is clearly being spent here, just a few hundred yards from one of Sao Paulo's infamous favelas or slums. I'm here for a tour of what Priscila Castelo Branco of Dazlu insists is rather more than a shopping centre.
It's not a mall. It's not.
What is it then?
Well, it's just like magical. It's magical.
Okay, magic away then.
So let's go. This first floor, men are not allowed, only women. Because we don't have, how do you say, for you to change.
Changing room.
You don't. We don't have that. It's everything open, like in your house, women, everyone changing and picking up clothes. And then if man wants to come and buy something, we have our sellers who come and they help you.
Yeah, well, that's the way the world is going. Concierges,
yeah.
Is it? If I come in and suddenly want an embarrassingly flimsy piece of lingerie for somebody I know.
She comes and she will show you all our models and then you choose which one you want.
Perfect.
Chanel. Right in front of us, Louis Vuitton and Gio Ranieri, that's our flower store.
Oh, and the Greek gods, or the Roman gods, are they? No, what are they? Greek or Roman?
I don't know, actually. We can
ask. They're wreathed, so they're, except for the ones with pots on their heads, they're wreathed.
It's only decoration.
Are there other places like this in Brazil?
No.
Why has it happened here in Sao Paulo, then?
Why has it happened?
Because I'm looking long, taking a long view, a long-term view, looking right out into the 21st century, when some economists think Brazil, Russia, India and China are going to be right up at the top of the most economically powerful nations. If the thesis is right, then this is going to happen more and more in Brazil and Russia and India and China. Well, Shanghai feels in some parts a bit like this, so I suppose it may have happened already in China. But this is the way the world is going to go, the way Brazil is going to go.
I hope so. But Brazil is a very poor country.
Yes, exactly. That's why it's so bizarre to have this in Brazil.
It's a very poor country, but we do have few people with economic power.
And they come here.
They do.
As a barista dispenses strong and complimentary coffee to the store's visitors, I'm joined by a chic woman who runs Dazzlu's glossy magazine. Patricia Ramayo has her own insights into her country's changing fortunes.
If you come to Brazil, you realize there are two Brazils. I wouldn't say only about rich Brazil and poor Brazil, but I would tell you serious Brazil, private Brazil and public Brazil. 10 years ago, you couldn't have a telephone. You had to wait like 3 years to get a line. And then suddenly they privatize. And now, you know, it's a market. You can have a telephone. Prices are going down.
But this gap between the rich and the poor, which is so extreme here.
Yes, it's very extreme. This is why you have a dozen.
Which is why you have this house here. But very close, you have a favela.
And people intend to blame Dazlu. No. We would love to have tons of Dazlus and no favelas. This would be the good thing. It's not Dazlu's fault that you have the favelas. It's not the case at all.
But for 100 years, people have been talking about Brazil as the next great economic nation. For 100 years, this has happened. This ought to be a very exciting time, a very exciting prospect for Brazil. But does that doubt hold Brazil back? The fact that it hasn't happened for 100 years make it seem unlikely to happen in the future?
It does, but my generation, for example, we didn't see the Brazilian boom happen, so we don't know if we believe in the Brazilian boom or not. So this is why we do it privately. If you want to take Dazlu as an example, you know, all the employees, they have schools, they have kindergartens for the kids. So what sometimes we think about Brazil is each big company gives the good example. Then we can, you know, we can maybe build a better Brazil, because if we don't get it from the government, let's try us to do it.
But there's a lot to be done.
Oh my God, a lot of be done. We don't invest in good infrastructure. And I think the worst thing of this country is that they don't invest enough in education. If they don't invest on education, you'll never be like the Chinese or the Koreans. This is why they go so fast, because they invest on education.
This is an extraordinary conversation to be having in one of the most luxurious shops I've ever been in the world.
But this is the way us wealthy Brazilian, if you want to take it this way, because I can't reach, you know, northeast of Brazil. So if I do good stuff in my community, maybe lots of small communities going up, maybe we can help Brazil to come up as a whole.
That's what the economists in Wall Street think is going to happen. We'll just have to come back in 50 years' time and see.
Okay.
Patricia Ramayo suggests private business in Brazil distrusts the government. The feeling appears to be mutual. Shortly after our conversation, Brazilian tax authorities raided Dazlu's offices. The world can be a more complicated place than economist equations may imply. And despite the dazzle of Dazlu, 44 million Brazilians, more than a quarter of the population, live in absolute poverty with an income of less than £1 a day. Is this really a country which has any chance of making it into the club of rich nations by 2050?
Contrary to what a lot of people think, Brazil has made great advances in recent decades. Brazil is not there yet.
Norman Gall runs the Fernand Braudel Institute of World Economics in Sao Paulo, doing research projects in some of the country's worst and most dangerous favelas.
There are more opportunities. There are more schools. The infrastructure is better. The telecommunications system is world class, which wasn't true 10 years ago. Brazil has enormous comparative advantages. China and India are desperately short of energy supplies. China is desperately short of arable land. The main constraints for really China becoming a major power is its water shortage. Brazil has the world's largest fresh water supply. I can go on and on about this. It has a more solid financial system than either China, Russia, or India.
Why hasn't Brazil made it up until now?
Brazil has serious institutional problems, and this is why Brazil has not realized its potential until now. Brazil is still overcoming its legacy of slavery. Brazil was not permitted as a colony to have universities. The first real university in Brazil was created in the mid-20th century. Education in Brazil is terrible. Brazil produces very talented people, but its institutions are very weak. Brazil has serious deficiencies in human capital and infrastructure. The Chinese are wonderful builders of infrastructure. They've been this way for over 2,000 years. They know how to mobilize people. At a certain level, they're very organized. The Brazilians are not that well organized. But Brazilians are probably a lot more creative than people in these other countries.
But it's not the creativity of Brazilians that's attracting so much attention to the country from rising economic powerhouses such as China. Nations hungry for raw materials to power their own booms are seeking out Brazilian mines and Brazilian agriculture. The privatized Brazil mining company CVRD says it's the biggest exporter of seaborne iron ore in the world, and the company is seeing huge demand from China. Fabio Barbosa is CVRD's finance director.
Well, we have reserves for a couple of hundred years.
And they're easy to get out? You just grab them out and transport them, and the transportation is the main problem?
No, it's not a problem. We are a very efficient logistic operator, and we are known for being a very good mining operator as well. That's why we are so competitive, even in faraway markets like Asia.
And China has taken a particular interest in what you do here, because China needs all the iron ore it can get. Even though it has a lot of its own, yours is more accessible than the stuff it has on the mainland in China, right?
Our iron ore has a much better quality. In fact, CVRD has the best iron ore in the world, even better than the Australians. To give an idea, the average iron content of CVRD's ore is about 66%, and the Chinese is about 32-33%. So it's much more efficient in a furnace.
No wonder when I see it piled up in the port of Qingdao, which I've been to, in mountains of it, then it goes that rusty colour straight away, waiting to be shipped inland, because it is so much iron ore. It simply rusts as soon as it comes in, doesn't it?
It's the issue of quality, and that's why they want our ore so much.
Now, this has always been something that Brazil has been famous for, of course, but it's even now more important on the world economic scene than it's been in the past because of China?
I believe so, because the Chinese growth is what we call metals intensive. China is in a stage of development that is absorbing raw materials, and Brazil is a major producer. As a whole, China is absorbing copper, alumina, nickel, all sorts of materials, and we are benefiting from this very good momentum.
But this is Brazil, and it's not easy for everyone to benefit from the Chinese demand. Here at the port of Santos, they're loading sugar for Saudi Arabia, frozen chickens for Asia, soya beans for China. but much of the produce has to travel from the farmlands of this vast country by truck. And the roads are actually getting worse, so the average speed of a truck has dropped 40% in the past 5 years. And Brazil's rail network hasn't expanded for 60 years. But despite the problems and the pressures, world demand for food seems to be offering Brazil a historic opportunity. That's certainly how it seems to Carlo Lovatelli, president of the top trade body, the Brazilian Agro-Business Association.
Our farmers are very, very, very capable. As far as soybeans concerned, we are more competent than even the U.S. I don't know if you had a chance to go to Mato Grosso and those areas and see those farms. It's fantastic. You see 24 machines, you know, picking up the production all in one go and on a V form. And then on the back, you have 16 machines with corn seed dropping. So, I mean, it's a scale that you don't see that, and not even in Illinois. It's breathtaking. It's something you have to see that.
Yeah. With potential, with much more potential?
With much more potential. If you take in consideration that we have over 90 million hectares of good land that can be used tomorrow in the center-west part of the country, not having to cut down a single tree. I'm speaking of the Cerrado area. And if you think that we use 54 million hectares at all today for everything we have and use, is more than 50% what we have today.
To feed China?
Well, we are heavy exporters for soybeans and soy oil to China. And it's increasing every year. On the other hand, you see traditional markets such as Europe, they have increasing difficulties in increasing their food production locally because of environmental limitations and surface area and other economical also reasons. So we have absolutely a big chance. Brazil has this potential, this land. We have all the sun we want around the year. We have all the water we need for that. I mean, all we have to do is get organized.
Enormous optimism here.
Yes. The Brazilian, he is a born optimist. It's part of our personality.
But it really does look as though something has happened, though some threshold has been stepped over, that there is great change going on here.
Yes. There is a big expansion for food, need for food. And Brazil has the capacity and the potentiality to provide a good deal of that. So, undoubtedly, we see Brazil as being a food seller for the future, for the world.
Will that give Brazil political power in the world that it doesn't have at the moment? Is that happening?
I hope so.
There is a rush of similar hope in this concert by underprivileged teenagers in Sao Paulo. They're serenading a superstar of Brazilian music, Gilberto Gil, who's also a cabinet minister in the troubled government of President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Gilberto Gil has no doubt that Brazil is about to play a much greater role in the world.
I mean, we have a lot of hope today. But at the same time, we balance. We feel that it's not necessarily repeating U.S. or repeating Europe, you know. We've been able to discover our own particularities, you know.
And what are the qualities Brazil would bring to the top table if it ever were to get there?
Softness. We have never been in a war against a foreign enemy. Never. We don't want conquering or invading or taking from other countries. Brazil is building up a new cycle of civilization.
Soft diplomacy from Gilberto Gil. But geopolitics brings some hard realities. Pedro de Camargo Neto led Brazil's negotiating team at the World Trade Organization talks at the start of the decade. He thinks Brazil is already using its new producer power to speak much more assertively at global trade forums.
We Brazilians did a lot of things wrong, but in the past 10, 15 years, we corrected a number of things and our potential now is appearing.
There is a new trading map to the world, isn't there? This is transforming the whole way the world trades.
Of course. Now Brazil is not only the exporter leader, but we are also a political leader. We are now sitting at the table by ourselves. We talk. We don't have to be behind Australia. I have nothing against Australia. I like them very much. But it's a different part of the world, a different size of population, and we can speak by ourselves.
But the political world is very slow to reflect these trade changes, these export changes. The International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the United Nations. The world is going to change. The institutions that run the world or try to run the world must change too.
Of course, because you cannot have what you had up to very recently, that the developed world institutions imposed what they wanted to the rest. This does not work anymore. You have to negotiate. We have something to say. We have to fit ourselves. We're not going to impose anything. We don't want anything imposed.
It was kind of simple before. It was rich world and poor world, wasn't it? Producers and consumers, that sort of world. It's getting complicated, isn't it?
Oh, it was like this. Sign here. This is good for you. I know. And now we read it and I say, we don't think so. We think it should be written a little differently.
And your voice can be heard.
Heard, and I have received an immense support in the developed world. The developed world citizens wants this. It is not a war with the developed world. It's a transformation.
The former trade negotiator Pedro de Camargo Neto, and his optimism is taken up by Brazil's Minister of Development for Industry and Foreign Trade, Luiz Fernando Falan. He is one of the industry figures the seemingly left-wing President Lula brought into government, a former president of Sadia, one of Brazil's biggest food processing companies.
I believe that during the next decade will be the country of the present, not the country of the future.
Is this going to be a benign growth, the world getting richer and Brazil and Latin America and other parts of the world sharing in this as a all boats rising sort of phenomenon? Or are they going to be terrible trade frictions? As the established, the post-Second World War landscape is disturbed quite a lot, are we going to see frictions as well as economic prosperity?
Well, that is normal. It's like marriage. When you date, you don't have frictions, but when you get married, some frictions appear. And the ability to manage the frictions and to get the benefits of the relationship, that is the challenge.
Brazil feels it's already well on its way to the top, but its new status could well bring dangers with it. The government says it's trying to stop the assault on the Amazon jungle, but huge areas of grassland are now being brought into cultivation. China is building roads and offering to finance new railways to get the stuff to the ports, but how equal is the relationship with China? Is Brazil in danger of coming under the influence of what's called the resource curse, which has corrupted other countries rich in raw materials? Back to the iron ore exporter, Fabio Barbosa.
The infrastructure is a very sensitive issue and strategic for a country. So we should establish what would be the role of the Chinese capital in the investments in infrastructure in Brazil, because infrastructure should be preserved for the country's strategic moves in the future.
Rather than just the Chinese investing in the things necessary to get the raw materials they need out of Brazil, you want the country served rather than just the Chinese purpose served by it.
What I'm saying is that we could find alternative partnerships that could include the Chinese, as we did in the past with the Japanese. So we have several initiatives that counted on the Japanese capital that could happen as well with China.
On the much-serenaded beach at Ipanema in Rio de Janeiro, athletic young men play impromptu volleyball under the gaze of bronzing lady admirers wearing barely a stitch of clothing. Somehow, ignoring all this distraction from his airy flat overlooking the beach, Diogo Menardi writes a controversial column for the magazine Veja. He's sceptical of government pledges to help the 50 million Brazilians who live in miserable rural poverty or drug-ridden urban slums. He says the answer to Brazil's problems is certainly not big government. Yet one of the few things he's not worried about is Brazil's reliance on raw materials.
There's nothing wrong with being a supplier of raw materials. We can earn money with it. Brazil has tried to do everything else. He has tried to be an industrial nation. We're very far away from being a really industrial nation. Our industry is very much directed subsidized, and it doesn't help in the long run.
You haven't mentioned rich and poor and the vast gap between them. Here we are with a picture window view of one of the great sights in the world, the beach here, and yet over the other side of the hill, terrible, terrible poverty. And that area is going to stay poor unless something's done to it.
Well, this is a paralyzing myth, the divide between rich and poor, because most rich in Brazil were not rich 20 years ago, 30 years ago. There is social mobility in Brazil, exceptional social mobility, and people earn and lose money very fast. There is a divide and there is contrast, obviously, but the contrast and the divide has become part of the rhetoric to maintain and to keep the whole image of the state who can cure this divide, the charity of the state. That's the only answer we've imagined in the last 60, 70 years, and it doesn't work. So if we had some savage capitalism like China, it could work better than the way it is.
Yeah, you might argue that China is state-directed capitalism designed to cope with the migration of poor people from the country to the city, and that's what the Chinese economic engine is all about, and all it is about, because the powers that be in Beijing are simply terrified that if the engine of economic growth stops, then the whole movement to the cities stops, and trouble builds up province by province across this enormous nation.
The idea of a welfare state is wonderful, but you Europeans cannot pay it. You don't have money to keep your welfare state intact. How can we, a poor nation, a banana republic, start from scrap and build a welfare state in a world that doesn't accept anymore? We won't be able to build a welfare state, so it's better to abandon this myth, this idea, and try to create something else.
You're skeptical about the ability of Brazil to produce this that builds a great nation in 50 years.
I'm quite skeptical, yes.
If it happened, of course, other countries might have to move over. I don't know how comfortable that would be for Europe, say, which might disappear very much from the top table, or America moving over and being challenged by the other engines of China and India. It's going to be an uncomfortable 50 years, isn't it?
Well, especially for you, yes, because you have something to lose. We don't have much to lose, so it will be less uncomfortable.
The commentator Diogo Menardi on living in a country with huge problems and absolutely huge potential. But this is part of an unprecedented world upheaval. If these so-called BRICS nations really are on the up, where does that leave the rest of us? That's next week's question here in Business.